Welcome to the Nowercast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, A.
And I'm B.
Today, we are looking at a massive traditional IPO in the quantum computing space that is testing the market's appetite for deep tech and raising questions about billion-dollar valuations for pre-revenue hardware.
We're also unpacking a new extreme climate battery designed for lunar operations and low Earth orbit data centers, and Google's latest move in local AI with an encoder-free multimodal version of Gemma 4.
It feels like the hardware and infrastructure layers of tech are having a major moment this week. We are seeing companies push the physical limits of compute, energy storage, and AI architecture all at once.
Exactly. Whether it's surviving negative 80 degrees in space or fitting a multimodal AI onto a standard laptop, the constraints are driving some really fascinating engineering. Let's get right into it.
Our first story today is the blockbuster debut of Quantinuum on the NASDAQ. They priced their IPO at $60 a share, but the stock opened at $68, reflecting massive investor demand right out of the gate.
And they raised a massive $1.68 billion by selling 28 million shares. This is a huge test of institutional confidence in quantum computing, especially because this was a traditional IPO, not a SPAC like we saw a lot of during the tech boom a couple of years ago.
Exactly. The pedigree here is important. Quantinuum was formed in 2021 when Honeywell Quantum Solutions merged with Cambridge Quantum, and Honeywell is still deeply involved. They retained about 49.1% of the voting power. That gives this company an industrial anchor that a lot of pure-play quantum startups just don't have.
But you have to look at the financials to see why this valuation is turning heads and making some analysts a bit nervous. Quantinuum reported 2025 revenue of just $30.9 million, alongside a staggering net loss of $192.6 million.
Right. So we are talking about a valuation north of $15 billion for a company pulling in barely over $30 million in revenue. Critics are inevitably going to ask if this is driven by actual commercial viability or just speculative quantum hype. Are people just buying the word quantum because they missed out on the AI boom?
It's a fair question, but I'd argue it's not just hype. The company is using trapped ion technology, and they are actively scaling their systems toward fault-tolerant computing. They have a clear roadmap. But right now, that $30 million in revenue is mostly coming from government research grants and early commercial partnerships. It is not a mass-market product yet, and it won't be for years.
The difference here compared to other publicly traded quantum players like IonQ or D-Wave is that traditional IPO structure and the heavy backing from Honeywell. It signals to the market that this isn't just a science experiment in a university basement, it's an industrial-scale infrastructure project.
It does. But the widening net losses show just how incredibly expensive it is to build a full-stack quantum provider. They need that $1.68 billion from the IPO to keep pushing toward a fault-tolerant machine before the public market loses patience. The R&D burn rate for maintaining and cooling these systems, let alone developing the next generation of logical qubits, is astronomical.
And we've seen deep tech companies struggle when the timeline for commercialization stretches out. The question is whether institutional investors have a longer time horizon for quantum than they do for, say, enterprise software. With software, you expect margins to improve quickly. With quantum hardware, you are funding a decade-long roadmap where the payoff is binary. It either changes the world or it doesn't.
Based on that $68 opening price, the demand is definitely there today. The real test will be their first few earnings calls. The market will want to see whether they can show a clear path to closing that nearly $200 million loss gap, or at least prove that their trapped ion approach is hitting specific technical milestones faster than IBM or Google's superconducting chips.
It's a massive bet on the future of computation. We will be watching very closely to see if that Honeywell connection gives them the industrial runway they need to survive the public markets, or if that $15 billion valuation becomes an albatross.
Speaking of hardware operating at the absolute extremes, let's talk about Solidion Technology. They just unveiled their Generation Extreme Climate Battery Platform,
or GenECB, designed specifically for space, lunar, and low Earth orbit AI applications.
The specs on this platform are wild. The battery is engineered to operate in temperatures ranging from negative 80 degrees Celsius all the way up to positive 60 degrees Celsius. In testing, they demonstrated over 500 charge cycles at negative 40 degrees. That is a temperature where traditional lithium-ion batteries essentially freeze up, lose capacity, and die.
That extreme temperature tolerance is achieved by using graphene for thermal conductivity and radiation resistance, which helps regulate the cell temperature internally. It's a fascinating material science approach to a problem that usually requires heavy, power-hungry external heaters on spacecraft.
Solidion is a microcap company, and they've recently pivoted their messaging hard toward the space and lunar economy. They're specifically targeting power needs for satellites, lunar infrastructure, and even LEO-based AI data centers.
And the market reacted immediately. Following the June 4th announcement, Solidion stock experienced significant volatility and a sharp intraday price increase. But this raises a major discussion point. Is this a genuine technological breakthrough, or are they just leveraging space and AI buzzwords to drive short-term stock momentum? I mean, LEO AI data centers sounds like a bingo card of tech buzzwords.
It really does, and it's the classic microcap dilemma. You drop a press release mentioning AI data centers in low Earth orbit and lunar infrastructure, and the retail traders jump on it. But building a patented platform is very different from actually integrating these batteries into a satellite supply chain and getting them space rated by NASA or the DoD.
Exactly. You have to look at their current footprint. They have minimal recent revenue. Moving from successful lab tests, even impressive ones like 500 cycles at negative 40 degrees, to flying hardware in space requires massive capital and rigorous qualification processes that take years. You can't just ship a battery to orbit because it worked in a freezer.
Still, the need for better energy storage in space is very real. If we're going to build out lunar infrastructure for the Artemis program, or put compute-heavy AI data centers in LEO to process satellite imagery on the edge, traditional lithium-ion batteries simply struggle with the thermal extremes and the radiation environment. Graphene's thermal properties make sense on paper for this application. It can move heat away from the cell rapidly during high discharge, or distribute it evenly when the battery is in the shadow of the Earth. But Solidion is going to have to prove they can manufacture these GenECB cells at scale and actually win contracts against established aerospace suppliers like Saft or Eagle Pitcher. Investors are clearly hungry for public companies with exposure to the space sector, especially with the anticipation building around a potential SpaceX IPO down the line. There are very few pure-play space stocks, so any company with a plausible space angle is catching a bid. Solidion is definitely riding that macro wave.
The real test is commercial adoption. We'll have to see if they can convert this announcement into actual revenue-generating partnerships with companies like Lockheed or Blue Origin, or if it remains just a really impressive lab test that never makes it off the ground.
Let's bring it back down to Earth, specifically to the rapidly evolving world of local AI. Google just released Gemma 412b, and it represents a fascinating structural shift in how multimodal models are built. It is an entirely encoder-free model.
Right, so to understand why this matters, you have to look at how traditional multimodal models work. Usually, if you want an AI to process images or audio, you use separate, dedicated vision and audio encoders to translate that data into tokens before it hits the language model. Gemma 412b removes those encoders entirely. It feeds raw input data directly into the LLM backbone.
And it is sized perfectly for high-end consumer hardware. At 12 billion parameters, it's designed to run locally on machines with about 16 gigabytes of VRAM or unified memory, like a modern MacBook Pro or a solid gaming rig.
Google also included a multi-token prediction, or MTP, companion model, to help reduce latency during inference. And crucially, the whole package is available under an OpenWeights Apache 2.0 license on platforms like Hugging Face, Ollama, and Google AI Edge Gallery.
This encoder-free architecture is a big deal for efficiency. By integrating vision and audio directly into the language model, Google is aiming to drastically reduce the memory footprint and the latency that usually comes with pipelined multimodal workflows. You aren't loading three different models into memory just to ask a question about an image.
The big question circulating in the research community right now is whether removing those dedicated encoders impacts the MADI's accuracy. Can it still interpret complex visual scenes, read small text in an image, or pick up on nuanced audio cues just as well as a traditional architecture? Some researchers argue that dedicated encoders extract features better than a general LLM backbone can.
That is exactly what developers are testing right now. Encoders were useful because they were highly specialized for their modality. By throwing raw pixel or waveform data at the LLM backbone, you are relying entirely on the language model's internal weights to figure out the spatial or temporal relationships. It's a bold bet on the generalization capabilities of the transformer architecture.
It also completely changes the game for fine-tuning. If you want to specialize the model for a specific medical imaging task, for example, you can't just freeze the LLM and swap out a vision encoder anymore. You have to fine-tune the entire unified model, which might require different techniques and compute requirements. You're touching the core weights of the model.
But the trade-off is accessibility. Having a 12 billion parameter model running natively on a standard 16 gigabyte laptop, capable of processing audio and images without a massive multi-stage pipeline, makes powerful agentic workflows a lot more practical for the average developer. You can build desktop apps that see and hear without API calls to the cloud.
It really feels like this 12B size is becoming the new sweet spot for local development. We saw the smaller Gemma 4 models and the massive 26B mixture of experts variants, but 12B hits that perfect balance. It's smart enough to handle complex reasoning, but small enough to not melt your GPU.
Especially with that Apache 2.0 license, we are going to see this integrated into local dev tools and agent frameworks incredibly quickly. It's a huge step forward for the local AI ecosystem, pushing the boundaries of what open weights models can do on consumer hardware. All right, let's pivot and hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up the show.
Sounds good. There's a lot of news in the margins this week that we need to cover. Let's jump in.
Redwire Corporation just announced a contract to grow wild strawberries on the International Space Station using their new commercial biostimulant designed for microgravity. The stock jumped 11 to 16% on the news, showing that commercial space agriculture is definitely catching investor attention as NASA shifts research to the private sector.
A. Nintendo confirmed they are developing a revised version of the Switch 2 specifically for the European market to comply with the EU's new batteries regulation. By February 2027, batteries in portable electronics have to be easily replaceable by users without specialized tools. The current models start with the code BEE, but the EU-compliant versions will have a unique OSM code on the packaging. It's a prime example of regional regulations dictating global hardware design.
A fun blog post made the rounds on Hacker News this week by Max Leiter, titled, "They're Made Out of Weights," parodying the classic Terry Bisson sci-fi story, "They're Made Out of Meat."
It's a great philosophical commentary. It strips away all the anthropomorphic language we use for AI and reminds us that LLMs don't have internal dictionaries or reasoning modules. They are ultimately just floating point numbers performing massive matrix multiplications.
Elixir version 1.20 dropped on June 3rd, officially introducing a gradual type system that performs type inference on existing code without requiring new syntax. It's a huge win for maintaining large-scale Elixir codebases, giving developers the safety of static analysis without the friction.
Over on the Claude Code GitHub, developers are requesting a simplified multi-turn conversation API for headless mode.
Right now, using the CLI programmatically with the bear flag requires manually parsing session IDs and handling 15-minute timeouts. It creates a ton of friction for building CI pipelines and evaluation harnesses, highlighting the need for better programmatic interfaces as AI agents move into production.
That is going to do it for today's briefing. Thanks for joining us as we navigate the hardware, software, and orbital edges of tech.
We'll be back tomorrow with more deep dives and updates. Until then, keep building and stay curious.
See you next time.